You're listening to the ISACA podcast. In today's Security Series podcast, we're speaking with Frank Downs, Director and Subject Matter Expert of ISACA's Cybersecurity Practice, and Dustin Brewer, Manager and Cybersecurity Product Platform Developer. In today's podcast, we're talking about some future threats and what we can do now to help prevent them. So to begin, can you two tell us a little bit about what threat casting is and then what threats we might be able to expect in the next few years?
We have this relationship with Arizona State University and the U.S. Army, wherein the goal is to identify problems that are going to be problems 10 years out. Now, what this consists of is we get together about twice a year and do something called threat casting. And threat casting is a methodical process through which you try to identify what the problems are going to be in 10 years, and then you walk it back to current day, identifying where the seeds of those problems lie. So one of the issues that we've determined as we're moving forward that bears some analysis, let's put it that way, is AI and machine learning and how it's impacting us in our daily lives. I think there's no debate that AI and machine learning are definitely becoming more relevant and prevalent in our daily lives, our work, and even, I'm looking here in my office right now. I have two different assistants. I have the Amazon Echo and I have a new Google Now speaker. And what those are doing are they're pretty much becoming, I don't want to use the word crutch for me, but becoming so helpful, maybe a little too helpful in that I'm becoming very dependent upon them. And so what we've seen is that as this dependence increases, we want to make sure it's something that is enhancing. So what we've done in these two studies that we've put together is identify how these different home automation devices kind of impact us on a regular basis and how they actually work within our lives. Are they the safest things to have in our homes and our offices and so forth? Or should we consider them, you know, as kind of a dual-edged sword? And I think our studies have kind of borne out some really interesting stuff. Wouldn't you say, Dustin?
Yeah, absolutely. And talk about a crutch. Like I forgot what a light switch looks like, right? You walk in and you click Google, turn on your lights. Or, you know, for me, it's like I say, good morning, Google, and it turns on my coffee maker, it turns on the lights, it turns the thermostat up to a certain level, depending on whether it's winter or summer. So yeah, I don't know how to touch things anymore. Like, I don't know how to tangibly.
You said that and it turned mine on, by the way, just right now.
There you go. There's a threat right there, right? You can be on a conference call with somebody and someone can say, you know, hey, Google, open the garage door up. That's probably going to start.
Don't do that. That will actually open my garage door.
Yeah, yeah, there Google, we go. Sorry. And that's going to, it'll impact something, right? It actually changes something in our physical world a lot of the times. And so, what we did with that is we actually, you know, we took it one step further and we're like, all right, you know, yeah, I know we're talking about something that maybe sounds a little futuristic, a little Skynet-y, a little Terminator-y, you know, like, oh yeah, the machines are going to take over. But you know, we took that and we were like, all right, let's walk this back a little bit. Let's see what is going on right now on networks that have these devices on them. And what nefarious, you know, if there was a nefarious actor on these networks, what kind of information could they glean? What could they learn about us? What could they learn about the devices that we have? What could they control in our house? We made two labs based off of that, and they're, you know, and if you're thinking, oh, they're using some kind of really cool, you know, new cyber analyst tool, we're not. We're using Wireshark for most of this. You know, we're just breaking it down and looking at the packets. Now it's really cool how we break down and look at the packets and you know, what we're actually looking for and how we can detect patterns within specific on specific devices or within, you know, within specific time frames, but it is just basic packet analysis, which is, I think, great. You know, I think it's great that we can look at things like that and be like, oh, look, we literally can figure out, you know, who's home, when they're home, when they get home, what they do when they get home. And we don't even have to, at this point, we're not even talking about having like some kind of midpoint thing where we're actually like tapped into somebody's network. We're talking about like looking at a Wi-Fi network. So you could be across the street. Depending on how good your equipment is, you could be anywhere in the neighborhood, you know, and still see what's going on in a particular house.
Okay. And so then going off of that point, what exactly can attackers do if they gain access to these kinds of home devices?
So, like I mentioned before, there's kind of a pattern of life they can start building on you, right? All of these devices have signatures. They all have very specific what we call the OUI, the MAC address, which can actually tell you the manufacturer of the device that's on there without, you know, going any further than layer two. Without getting too technical, I'll try to keep myself here from going too technical, but you know, everybody loves I love harping on this. Everybody loves to use the word IoT, and they're like, all right, we got a secure IoT and IoT. And you know, what is IoT? Well, it usually an IoT device is a computer on your network, right? Now it usually has a really old Linux kernel or some kind of, something that's free, right? Because you know, they cut costs. It's got to be something that's free and open source and easy to implement. There are some Windows IoT devices, but for the most part, it's going to be Linux, and, it's going to be, you know, default security on most of it. So, you know, one of the big hacks we saw recently with VPN filter, the Russian VPN filter malware attack, where kind of it stalled itself onto IoT devices within a house. You know, and then from there, whatever information they could glean off that would be whatever information was flying back on your home network, including, you know, bank information, our financial information, personal information. You know, it's limitless at that point because we use technology. We use the internet for everything nowadays. Frank, do you have anything to add to that?
And there's so many different ways to do it too. The one that I always thought was really interesting was the Nest thermostat hack that came out a few years ago, where literally you could just have a thumb drive in your pocket, and if you saw a Nest thermostat, you just had to put the thumb drive into it. There's a little USB port at the bottom, and all you had to do was connect to it, and then within, I think it was an under 30 seconds, you had complete control of the Nest. And that's a point of presence for you then. If you want to conduct any kind of operation, if you're a malicious attacker and you want to launch any kind of operation, you can do it from there now. And it's in one of the places people least suspect, because when they think about attacks, when they think about hacking and so forth, you know, people are definitely thinking computers, and they're starting to think their phones, right? But they're not thinking their thermostats. They're not thinking their Blu-ray players. They're not thinking their coffee machines. And yeah, even coffee machines are susceptible and can be that kind of tunnel back to an attacker's listening post where they can conduct attacks. So it really shows the pervasiveness of these things. So it's especially when you talk about the AI tools, where you have the machine learning tools such as the Google devices and the Echo devices, it really takes it to a whole next level, because these devices really need a certain level of capability and hardware so that they can perform that, making them very sweet targets in that way. Also, as Dustin kind of hit on as well, you can see when people, if you're in the right location, you can see and learn when people do certain things. Let's take this a step further. If I've compromised, if someone compromises my Echo here at the house, or my, as I said, my Google Assistant, they then are able to build a pattern of life off of me and my family, knowing when I'm where. So they know when I'm home, when I'm not, when I'm in a room, when I'm not. They know what temperature I like the house, right? Off of this, they can build a very comprehensive profile of me and then use that for, I don't know, say they want to come rob me, right? They'll know when I'm not home. They'll know when I'm asleep. They'll know when I'm not looking. So there really are a lot of considerations that need to be taken, need to be factored into this as people put these into their homes.
People may care more about their computer getting hacked rather than their coffee maker getting hacked. Why should we care, though, if our coffee maker is compromised?
Well, first, Safia, because I need that coffee to be just right in the morning, if you want me to be in any way approachable, right? No, but in all seriousness, it's important because these devices, as Dustin and I have learned, will contain just enough smarts for people to then get further access. So, yeah, maybe the computer at your desktop isn't easily accessible, but know what will give me time to do a thorough evaluation of that system in the closest way possible. Maybe I get onto this thermostat over here. I get onto this. I'm literally looking at a door sensor right now that is connected to the internet here in my house, right? And that can be used. And here's the thing. Those updates are not pushed out nearly enough. Those firmware updates, those operating updates. I've got a lot of things here that haven't been updated since they're out of the box, because they're not very smart, but they're just smart enough to enable a capability, and then people then just don't think of security when they're building it. What would you say, Dustin?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You definitely hit the nail on the head with that. And it's all about finding persistence on the network, right? Because then that gives you more, one of the biggest ingredients you need in a good hack is time, right? You need time to sit there and analyze and get access and like you said, escalate access. And all those things are important in that. Alongside of that, and this might seem a little too science fictiony for a lot of people, but let's take a coffee maker. Let's say, all right, we have this coffee maker. It's an IoT device. Well, what is a coffee maker? Well, it boils water and then pours it through a filter with coffee or something in it. Okay. So we have this device that's connected to the internet that basically has a heating element in it. How much further is it to go? Okay, well, if somebody hacks into that device and figures that out, is it possible to start a fire in somebody's house? You know what I mean? Like, now we're talking about destruction of physical property. Again, that probably sounds super science fiction-y, but I'll tell you, actually, I did some IoT testing on a device in my house, you can actually set the temperature on it, and I'm talking about, like, steaming and boiling water at this point. So you can actually, like, set the temperature to a specific thing just by doing a simple hack on this device. And it's scary. It's scary when you think about it like that, right? It's like, okay, then now we're changing something in the physical world once again in order to possibly cause damage or destruction.
So let's talk a little bit about the future of devices. What kind of devices can we expect to see in the future? And are we going to see the use of these devices increase despite security concerns?
Well, yeah, without a doubt. I don't think we're going to be getting rid of IoT or AI. AI is definitely not going away. It's definitely both of those are big buzzwords that are turning into big businesses. And people love it. Like Frank and I said, we both kind of are at a point where we forget we have light switches. We forget that, we forget how to, use our hands to turn the thermostat up and down. We just tell Google what to set it to. So I don't see these devices going away anytime soon. Now, what I do see is, from Black Hat and DEF CON and actually from some talks at CSX, North America and Europe, I do see an increase in manufacturers being aware. At least aware on a level where they're like, well, we need to make sure that nobody can break into these devices. And, of course, Google and Amazon are leaders in security. And, on that side of the equation where, they're using the best security mechanisms that are out there. So there is that part of it. But it's the manufacturers of these little devices, I think, that, are kind of the Achilles heel of the whole system. But it is something that I see getting better. I see them, I see more and more manufacturers actually looking at security as an aspect of creating a device and building that into the device as they're designing it.
And I would add to that as well. You're seeing it in so many different ways too. For example, how many different insurance companies have you seen who want to give you the best deal possible by putting an IoT device in your car? There's little things that plug into your OBD readers that tell them how fast the car's going, where it's going, when it's at certain locations. Also, they can give you this quote-unquote better rate. However, at the end of the day, it can go both ways with that, right? So I think you're just going to see greater dependence on these things. People are going to be required to do it. I mean, so for example, you want our insurance, you need to let us monitor your car. You want to, for example, who knows, you want to be, as we're seeing with the HoloLenses that are becoming more popular, like the augmented reality elements, who's to say that this won't turn into a requirement for certain professions, right? If you want to be a doctor and you want to be insured in our hospital, you have to use this assisted augmented reality tool, right, to show you where to cut and where to do the surgery so you can guarantee better, quote-unquote, better results. And then, of course, naturally, the hacking becomes a concern there, right? Because if an attacker takes over something like that and you cut in the wrong spot, well, that's a big concern. So I think you're going to see greater adoption because it's already there. And no one's, like Dustin said, no one's going to be going backwards on this one. We've kind of let it all, we've opened Pandora's box here, for better or for worse in this instance. Yeah, we don't have to turn on our lights with light switches anymore, but at the same time, we do have a bigger attack. We've opened ourselves up to greater attack space. Or greater, what's the buzzword again? That's big, Dustin.
Attack surface.
Our attack surface. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, there's always new buzzwords coming up to mean the same thing. right? So there's going to be a lot greater risks and a bigger attack surface there.
So you mentioned Google and Amazon, but are other companies building security into the start when it comes to their devices?
Well, like I said, I think it's getting better. It has been in the past. You know, again, you know, I said, what is IoT really? It's really just a tiny computer, right? And that's true. Now, it's sometimes so tiny that there's very limited space on these, and that's why they use the older Linux kernel versions as opposed to the newer ones, and that's why they don't have operating system firewalls installed on them. There's just not enough space for these little devices that do very particular tasks. You know, the manufacturers are doing the best they can. They want to still, you know, keep a product so that it's affordable for, you know, all users. But they also need to now think about security. So it is getting better. I understand, and I think most professionals, security professionals, understand why they're not secure. You know, they understand why it's something that's being brought up more and more often in conversations. It's an uphill battle, because as soon as we find a fix for, you know, for one thing on one device, there's probably going to be another thing that comes out on another device. I mean, it's or on the same device. It's the same thing with anything in security. There's a constant battle between, hackers or I guess you could say, you know, defenders of a network and people who want to break into that network or device.
And I agree with Dustin on that, but no one here has a crystal ball, and we can't predict what's going to be coming down the pipe. And that's what makes so much of cybersecurity both exciting and interesting, but also difficult, because you're always working specifically against enemies whose sole goal is to subvert and take advantage of things that you've put in place to enable capability, while at the same time trying to keep secure. You can't predict the other adversary's kind of mentality. And it's always changing, and they're always looking for ways around. And let's be honest, they're successful. And the best we can do is respond and then implement that into our development cycles so that it doesn't happen again, while trying to use that data to predict how it could be used in the future, and then strengthen ourselves from those perspectives as well.
And to build on that, I was out at an event in California this weekend, where there was a university that was putting together with a private a private company, they put together this hackathon where the manufacturer actually provided an IoT device to these students and to this university, and set up different bounties on particular bugs. So if the students were able to find a way to hack into this IoT device, they would get a certain amount of money for doing it. And I think there are more and more manufacturers who are like, all right, you know what, maybe we didn't build this, you know, to security specifications, or maybe we did, but either way, we want to see what you can do with it. And you know what, instead of it causing multi-millions of dollars of damage, let's go ahead and pay some security professionals right now to have fun with it and find any issues with it. You see more events like that happening. You see more, it used to be kind of, how do you secure your network? Well, I'm not going to tell you that. Why would I tell you how I secure my network? Because then you know how I secure my network. And there was kind of like this like hiding of information, but I kind of see a more open source, more sharing community of information with each other, especially within cybersecurity.
Which is nice, by the way, because we're seeing that in all different elements, not just private sectors and academia, but you're even starting to see it, for example, with the election stuff that's coming up here in the States. You'll have these competitions to see, you know, well, here we have one of the machines, right? Can you hack it? How quickly can you hack it? And you show how you hack it. And that happened at DEF CON, right? Dustin, you were there. You saw that. They had these competitions to see how quickly you could hack one of the election machines, one of the voting machines. And what was it, like a 10-year-old or 12-year-old was able to do it? Which was pretty...
Yeah, that was at one of the DEF CON supported events. I think it was a 12-year-old, and he got into it pretty quickly. It was interesting at DEF CON at the voting the voting machine hacking village that they had there. They had, I think, 11 different machines set up, and they'd have multiple of them. And you basically just walk in and hack the machine. You just sit down at it and start, you know, doing whatever you wanted to do to it. They had a couple of professionals there as well who were with different organizations that, you know, basically were hired to go and see how hackable these machines are. And a lot of physical security stuff, or a lot of physical hacks, went into it. But that, you know, that's dangerous in and of itself, right? Like, we try to look at security in depth. We try to look at, you know, all aspects of everything, including, you know, including physical access, or remote access is obviously incredibly dangerous. But, you know, physical access can be just as dangerous depending on where you get these devices from. But yeah, no, a lot of really cool things happening, I think, with sharing of information and the free sharing of information and other companies like Facebook. You know, I know they're still trying to figure out what happened, but, you know, coming out like when it happens and saying, OK, here's what we can tell you so far. We'll release details as we can, you know, as quickly as we can. But we still need to figure out what's going on internally. So, you know, while they're fixing those hacks and everything. And then hopefully they'll release, you know, okay, here's what happened and here's how we fixed it, and go on from there.
It's great to hear that the culture is much more supportive of information sharing. But why do you think this cultural shift is occurring?
It's the millennials.
It totally is.
They're doing, it's, I guess we, millennials, I think millennials are, you know, it has been this sharing of information that's been happening. You know, we kind of grew up with the internet. We grew up with, you know, some free information. Of course, the next generation is going to have even more, you know, freedom of information. And it's just something I think it is generational. I'll take back my original statement. It's not millennials. It's just that each generation is getting better about it because we're growing up with it. We're growing up with massive amounts of information at our fingertips just by, you know, Google was a big help with that when they created the, you know, the end all be all search engine, right? That is incredibly easy to use and can aggregate data in seconds. And there's all kinds of good stuff that it's doing. And, you know, growing up in that society, I think helps a lot with that.
And frankly. And to add to that, I think there's two other aspects to that, right? You're seeing this mentality in cybersecurity that a high tide raises all ships, right? So there's no real value to not sharing it all the time. In fact, what you're seeing is it can be much, much more damaging to try and keep a problem, right, a compromise under wraps than if you actually had been up front. Let's take two case examples in this instance, right? In the first instance, let's go back to the Equifax hack that happened a year and a half ago, right? It was a problem, but it became a much bigger problem when everybody found out how long the executives and the teams at Equifax knew about it before telling anyone, right? It went from being a big problem to being a really big concerning problem. The next one I'll use is Uber. The big Uber hack that happened last year, maybe it was a year and a half also. The hack actually had occurred a year before it was made public. And then when it was made public, then everyone had found out that they had been, all their data had been exposed. I think it was the drivers in this instance had been exposed and they weren't even told, right? That they had lost all this information about them and they didn't know until a year later. Oh, it really compounds the issue when you try to keep it under wraps and keep it secret. Nobody should get this wrong, right? A hack and an attack is bad news bears any day of the week. However, how do you compound this problem and make it so much worse? By not telling anybody and trying to keep it under wraps, because eventually when it does come out, then it's a much bigger issue.
Right. And also, you know, one of the things that's really helping with this as well is the fact that if you do find a zero day or a particular hack that or some kind of vulnerability in a system, you don't get automatically thrown in jail these days, which, you know, is something that has kind of happened in the past, right? Like if, what do you do? You're hacking? Oh, okay, well, go to jail. You know, just go straight there.
Exactly, straight to jail. It's like Monopoly.
Right, it's like just like Monopoly, right? Now they pay you. There, most companies, Google, Apple, most companies have bounties on bugs, and you can say, okay, hey, I hacked into this and I found this bug and here you go and here's everything. They're like, great, here's $10,000, you know, congratulations. I mean, systems like that are really helping the flow of information as well, because people are more willing to come forward with something when they see it, right? They're because they know that they're not going to go to jail. As a matter of fact, they might even get paid or even get a job offer for it.
Thanks, Dustin and Frank. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the podcast. To make sure you never miss another podcast with Frank and Dustin, be sure to subscribe to the ISOCA podcast.